Frozen Shows is filmed in front of a live Twitch audience.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Bros and Shows. I am your host, Josiah, aka Mahler67, and with me, as always, I got my buddy, I got my pal, I got my brother Austin. Austin, how you doing today?
Doing pretty good, how about you?
I'm doing pretty good too. Awesome, we are recording this early, so for all the people who are in the chat, yep, that's right, we are pre-recording this because we have our friend, our buddy, our nerd watcher along with us, my friend Jordan. Jordan, how you doing?
I'm doing good, thank you very much.
Yeah. We got our friend Jordan here. Back whenever we first started kind of doing like a original podcast, me and Austin, we had the Nerds Watch, which we had Jordan on regularly to the point where I think actually you were kind of like a co-host almost, I think.
I think, I'm not 100% sure. I know, like, it's been a while, and I came on the last, like, two seasons, I think, but I was on for, like, every episode for those, so.
Oh, yeah, we enjoyed having you because you were, like, a nice little perspective. You had knowledge of the different houses. I'm not sure, did you ever read the books?
No, I haven't read the books. I still really haven't. Like, I'm not a big book reader, but, like, I know you've told me about how, like, they're on Audible, and, like, honestly, like, listening to those at work would probably be good because I literally have nothing else sometimes, but my MP3 player broke. It doesn't want to boot on anymore, so I have to get a new one. But I still have my Mighty, so I get like all that stuff, but it only has 5 hours. But yeah, anyway, enough about life stuff.
I feel that, what was it, if it just like black screen or whatever like that, I know how to fix that, like if it just does not turn on, because that happens constantly with mine.
It won't turn on, but like we tried the factory reset trick, didn't work.
Oh, okay. Well,
yeah. I didn't use it for a while, and I kind of just left it on my lanyard and just put it in the car when I got done with work. So it might have just like fried or something like that in the car.
Yeah, that's very possible. Well, see what we can do. Guys, we are here because after a horrific 8th season of Game of Thrones, where I defended, I still defend how it ends. I didn't defend how they got there. That is my honest truth. We have the returns of Ger Martin's World of Ice and Fire with House of Dragon. So,
bum bum ba da dum bum ba ba.
Yeah. Let's first dive into this. Just so everyone's perspective's known. Jordan, what is your knowledge of the story of the House of Dragons that they are telling the Targaryen Civil War?
I know it happened.
Okay. So you have that's no huge That's awesome. That's absolutely amazing. I love that. So you just know it's happened. You maybe know like a couple names or something like that, or
like it's stuff like that. Like I've done like when I get into like lore for like whatever reason, if there's something I like that happens, I'll like go and like do a deep dive on like that specific thing. So I know the events in House of Dragons or the Dance of Dragons leads up to eventually, just because time passes. But I believe it does have some correlation with the Black Rebellion.
Yes. Oh yeah.
Yeah. So that was something I looked into, because I looked into the one I can't remember the name off the top of his head, the Blackfyre bastard.
Mm-hmm. Oh, there's a bunch of them. There's like three of them.
But there's the one that like starts the Blackfyre. It was the one you were telling me about the other day that like caused the controversy of one got the sword but the other got the title.
Yeah, yeah. Because that's where the losing of Black Sister happens. Because no one knows where the Targaryen legacy sword, Black Sister, or Blackfyre.
It's Blackfyre, because Dark Sister is the one that Damien had.
Dark Sister. Yep. I think it's actually, the weapon is called Dark Sister. That they lose. And, like, that's why in Game of Thrones, the actual series, or even the books, no one knows where that is, because it kind of disappeared, and it went across the seas. Whenever the Blackfyres escaped Westeros after the Blackfyre Rebellion. technically this doesn't have as much to do with it, but it leads the,
into it.
Yeah, it's the start of the like dissonance between family members of the Targaryens. The one thing I found interesting about the Targaryen book, like I know Austin, we talked not too long ago, you started reading Fire and Blood. And you start realizing when like the only family that ruins the House of Dragons is the House of Dragons. It's yeah. It's very noticeable. And what the Targaryen, the Dance of the Dragons does is it fractures the house in a way that no one really trusts anyone, and it perpetuates throughout the rest of the years. So okay, Jordan, so that's you don't have much, but you know of some things. Austin, what is your knowledge of like the events of Dance of Dragons and House of Dragons?
Back when season 7 of Game of Thrones came out, the special DVD features had like a lore of it. And it was done like, you can look this up on YouTube. It's like the lore of like the Dance of Dragons. And I watched those, forgot all about what happened in those. But I remember like two key things, which I'm not going to stay here on this podcast because it's spoilers for probably next season. I remember one other thing is I know the ending to a certain character because Joffrey talks about it in season 3 of Game of Thrones. Because I remember when he said the name and then I watched House of Dragons, I was like, oh, that's that person. Okay, this makes sense now. So then I was like, yeah, I know that person's demise. So I'm not going to state what that is. If you want to go back and watch Game of Thrones season 3, you can watch that. Joffrey explains it. What's really funny is in the lore that they talk about, like in the season 7 lore, like little animated thing they did. Joffrey actually tells that story. He's the one that narrates it, so it's really cool.
That is the thing I love about the lore stories of the Game of Thrones show, because that's actually what got me into reading the books, was those little shorts. They're told from the perspective of each of the different house members. And the Dance of the Dragon one that you're mentioning is told by like 7 different people at different levels whenever it like pertains to their family, with Joffrey, with Robert, with the Martell dude. I can't think of his name.
William Martell.
Yeah, they do all that stuff. So yeah, so that's what you know too, and then you're now reading the books.
Yeah, I'm like I just got to where kind of like where the House of Dragons like starts in a way. So like I've gotten a little bit to there, so like I know like about Aegon's conquest and you know, a couple other things. So like it's interesting. I'm trying to like you know, this is gonna be kind of hard because the thing is, it's like I know some things that are going to happen and I'm excited for season 2 now. But yeah, that's all I really know is, and then I'm gonna keep reading the rest of them, of course, because I kind of like lost things to read on Audible right now because part 3 of Sandman, I just finished that like a couple days ago, and I'm like, I have nothing to read, especially when I like do drives and stuff with individuals that are like over an hour long or 2 hours long. I put that on because they're usually asleep, so I just listen to it.
And that's the thing, like the book of the House of Dragon is actually very entertaining. And this is going to be a topic we're going to talk about, because from what I know of the House of Dragon, after I started watching Game of Thrones, I bought all the books of the Song of Ice and Fire, read through all of them. Well, technically I audibled because me and Jordan we used to work at the same place, and you just had a lot of time to just sit there and listen to things. And I listened to all those books, then proceeded to buy the Tales of Westeros series, which is like the different houses. Then I bought the House in Blood, or Fire and Blood, listened to all those, and I downloaded all the lore videos from HBO that they did for that, and re-listened to it. And so I listened to the House of Dance of Dragons on Audible. Not Audible, on the HBO version, and I basically just dove hardcore into it. So I know exactly how everything goes, and one of the reasons why I'm so interested and excited for this series and anyone who knows like the lore of it, is the Book of Fire and Blood, or House of Fire and Dragon, whatever the Targaryen book is.
Fire and Blood.
It is told from the Maester's perspective, who is reading manuscripts and information given by other Maesters. And when it comes to the Dance of the Dragon, as they call it in the books, you have three main perceptions being written by. You have a simple fool named Mushroom, I believe his name is Mushroom, that a lot of the family didn't care if he was in the room, because he's just a simple-headed person, like, he can't tell anything. And he tends to tell things in more of a, like, sedacious mindset, like, oh, they did it because, you know, they were in love with each other, or they had this to protect, or, like, it was this and this, and he gave, like, very gruesome details. You had a Maester who wrote it down years later, who had, like, secondhand accounts or whatever, and obviously he could be biased because he wants it to look good for the winning faction of the Dance of the Dragons. So he may omit certain details or say certain other details didn't happen. And then you, of course, have the third hand accounts from different lords hundreds of years in the future, who basically say, like, well, my dad said this happened or this happened. And so there's a huge misconception, a huge mindset of the what's that term? I kept saying it. You can't trust the narrator, essentially.
Misinformation.
Exactly. Misinformation. You're hearing one end of things. And that's what I find so interesting about the show. And there's already points of it happening in the season one of the misinformation or misknowledge being presented. And
yeah, because... Yeah. Oh, yeah, go ahead.
Well, no, I'm like, that's just why I'm super excited. And that's what I know of the show.
So what's really funny is, like, me starting this audiobook and I heard about these three guys, Mush and the other two. This kind of reminded me, and I think George R. Martin has inspiration to write these by a certain book he might really like, because after listening to some of this, I kind of like started thinking of this old book that I used to read, and it's just a bunch of stories. And Geoffrey Chaucer is like one of the biggest like authors of that medieval time, and that is Canterbury Tales. And I've seen that like this kind of feels like that, where the narration is completely one-sided sometimes.
Oh yeah, 100%. So like at the beginning of the Fire and Blood book, you hear that he is writing the book for Joffrey, and he specifically says King Joffrey of House Baratheon, first of his line and everything.
Yeah.
And because he is saying this, you know he's going to like tell certain things in the favor of House Baratheon, or
yeah.
You also notice he also does it for House Lannister as well, because they are the conjoined houses. Just like if a Maester was writing a book for the Hightowers or for the Targaryens during this time, they would talk very highly of the Targaryens and the Hightowers, because they are conjoined families at this time. And you hear that from the get-go.
Oh.
I love that.
Yeah.
All right.
So... dive into the show.
Yeah, let's do it.
Let's get into it. So, I'd like to say I'm glad that they picked Matt Smith to play Damian. I think he really works as an actor and the character itself. I think that he's also that person that you love to hate.
If you're the internet, you just love. You will defend him no matter what horrific thing he does.
Yeah, so the thing is with this is I think it shows a lot of Matt Smith's like techniques when he acts, and how one minute he could be the person that you care about the most, and the next minute be like, dude, this guy's nuts. Like, this guy is crazy. He also, I was gonna make a joke about him because I was thinking about the whole time. But I don't remember now. It was something that had to do with the brothel scene and her, like him bringing her there.
Okay.
It was Travis Fickle vibes. I was like, when that was happening in the show, I was thinking of Travis Fickle. And you two probably don't know who Travis Fickle is, because, you know, I don't think you've ever watched this film. But there was a movie back in like the late 70s. and it was directed by Martin Scorsese, and it was a movie called Taxi Driver, and it had Robert De Niro, and Robert De Niro's character is a taxi driver, and he meets this girl, and he convinces her, hey, we should go see a movie, and he has no common decency at all. So he ends up taking her to like kind of like the brothel of our time, which is like a porno theater.
Okay.
And he like takes her there, and she was like, what's going on? He's like, we're watching a movie. When that was happening with Damon and him, that clicked in my head. I don't know why, guys. I don't know why. It just, it felt like it was kind of like that. Like, why are you taking her to a brothel type deal? But there was also, I'm not going to say too much about this, but I've seen with this show, there's a lot of foreshadowing going on. Like they've put in these little Easter eggs that foreshadow like some futures of people. I'm not going to say it because it is a spoiler. So I'm not going to say there is a foreshadow of a death they do, which I'm not going to bring up.
I mean, they've done it multiple times already. Like in the very first episode, whenever I think it's Viserys was talking to Rhaenyra. Mm-hmm. And he said, like, the mindset and the belief, our brain, that we control the dragon is a myth.
Yeah.
We connect with the dragon and we, like, fight with the dragon. And they're like family members, but ultimately the dragons make their own decisions. And they only listen to us because we are family. Yeah. That is a connotation for the whole event of the Dance of the Dragon. Because even though this is a family all together, they are ultimately making decisions that hurt and kill each other.
Mm-hmm.
And then of course we get the event of what happens at the end because they do not control the dragon. But yeah, awesome, you mentioned Matt Smith. I do gotta say, like, I don't know, guys, I've been very happy with the cast that they have been getting for it. I don't feel like anyone's really out of place. There are certain characters where I'm just like, I don't know, man, I don't know how I feel about this person, but it's not that I think they're wrong for the role. It's more of like, they're either playing their character so well that I hate them, or I haven't seen them enough to say if I like them.
There's only one character I see that annoys me. Okay. It's because of the facial expressions that happen on this like actress's face. And it kind of deters me away sometimes. When she's trying to act, I'm just like, I don't like that face. It's the girl that plays Rhaenyra, like in her early stages.
Rhaenyra?
Yeah, like her, you know, face sometimes is just weird.
You know what's funny? Like, yeah. Austin, that's exactly what people said about Daenerys in the first couple seasons as well.
Mm.
They all down-talked her for saying that she had like horrible acting with like facial expressions. Because unfortunately, originally in the show, they had her staring off and just like long shots of her face for a very long time. And that's not really on her. That's more of like on the direction that you're given.
Yeah.
If you're told to perceive like an emotion or a thought process. Like, what are you going to do? Just like stand there blankly? That's what ends up happening, because everyone, when they think of stuff, they just get blank stare.
I think the biggest one that I saw, like with her staring off in a way, like acting that way, that I'm just like, oh my gosh, please transfer to something else. It was when her and Sir Christopher is on the boat and Christopher wants her to run away with him.
Mm-hmm.
And they have like that huge argument at the end. And there's something also I feel that needs to be looked at in that scene too. CG wise. Mm. But after they have that talk, you should just watch what her facial expression is like right afterwards, and they like pan in her face for like a good, I'd have to say 2 minutes, maybe a minute, and it just like made me cringe. I was like, oh my gosh. But the older lady too, I had problems with some of her facial expressions too, because like there was one time where I thought she was like smiling and laughing when she was delivering her lines, and I don't think they kind of hit it. But overall, like, it wasn't anything where I was like, I hate this actor, period. I think like they did pick some great actors to do this. Like Gavin McTavish is in it. I think he played great as one of the knights, as one of the royal guards. You know, and the guy from Last Kingdom, I think he's doing really well as Aemon. Mm-hmm. I think he's a great actor. And I liked reveal that they reveal at like in the lore, I was waiting for it, and when it panned over and he had like the ruby or the sapphire, I think it's the sapphire in his eye, I was like, yeah. So, but
I kind of agree with you. I think a lot of the actors are doing good. I think the whole thing you pointed out about like them having weird faces or whatnot, that a lot of time is because of the direction that they're given.
Yeah.
And any amount of prolonged staring at someone's face, you start noticing like, this is awkward. This is crazy. Yeah.
And then you can tell when HBO kind of like tries to hide their CGI for cutting down the, you know, the expense of the show. And they used it in like, what was it? Season 8 of Game of Thrones. They did that where they would hide it in darkness. So then like you would have to look like this, and some of the CGI that I seen was in darkness, and it kind of like, you can tell that that's when they lowered the budget, but still doesn't bother me. Sometimes it does upset me because I have to focus really hard. If something happens in the dark, then I'm like, okay, I got to know what's going on. But one of the things I wanted to point out, and this is a question to you actually, because I have no clue. I wasn't listening to it properly when I was reading it so far. But we see like the throne being just the swords and everything.
Yeah.
But what is what's the outer swords? Like, so, are those like the original? Is that still part of the throne?
So, okay, Jordan, you go ahead and take this.
I was going to say, because like, I know that Josiah's probably going to give the right answer, but I know that the original Iron Throne, a lot of like book fans were disappointed. Mm. It's supposed to be a mountain of swords.
Yeah.
And gotcha. Then, but they didn't really convey that.
Mm.
And like, it's supposed to be like made from the 1,000 swords of Aegon's enemies. And like, when you look at the chair, you're just kind of like, is there really 1,000 swords? And then, so I think what they did is instead of just making it this mountain, they just made it wider.
Yeah, more expansion.
Yeah, like, Jordan's exactly right. How it's portrayed in the book is that it's not just a seat. It is the whole walkway up to the seat as well. And it's not like on the steps, it's on its own thing, but it's just this mound of swords building this chair. And that's why like you'll read about it multiple times in Game of Thrones, in the House of Dragon thing, that people constantly stab themselves on the chair.
Yeah, because like I don't want to say that. Never mind. I'm not gonna say that because that's a spoiler. But yeah, like, you know, we also talked about the other thing I wanted to talk about is the scabs or the lesions that are on Viserys, are those from the Iron Chair? Is that what they're alluding to, that he sits on it for so long that that's where he gets the sores? Or is that some type of disease that he has?
I believe that's what they're alluding to.
He lives for a long time, because like, he's like, he kind of does the whole Phantom of the Opera thing, you know, with his side of his face thing. And I kind of like had to stop there for a minute, because his one side of his face was like kind of like exposing his muscles when he talked. And it reminded me like Two-Face.
Eye missing and everything.
Yeah, he's Two-Face. Yeah, the eye missing was like, okay, this is where they cancel me. No, I'm just kidding. I'm not going to say anything. But what I'm saying is, it's like, you know how like they have like that? It was like this type of gold stuff in his eye. It looked like pus, like in his eye. I don't know why, but I was just like, poke. I just felt like that.
Well,
but no.
See, that's the thing. Like, obviously, he works all the time on the throne, and that throne constantly cuts you and like messes you up. And he was getting infected. Because here's the thing, right? This is the thought process for the throne. If people get cut and burnt, like slashed up by it, freaking no one's cleaning that, you know? Like, why would they clean this like bloody throne or this like metal throne with like cloth, and then the cloth gets all cut up and then you're cutting your hand? No one's cleaning that. And so him being covered in like all these sores and whatnot, if you get cut on that throne, you instantly got dysentery or some form of disease on it. And I think that's what we see with him, is he gets cut a lot and he's being kept alive by like the medicine that's being brought to him, but also because they're just like, well, fudge, like your foot's gone, man, like you got gangrene on it, we gotta chop it off if you want to live. And so they just chop off his leg, and then it's like, all right, now he hobbles.
Yeah,
I said feet. Feet is a very strong, very strong storyline of this show. All right, Jordan, I want to hear your thoughts. What are some things that you liked about it or didn't like about it? Like, because this is all like kind of new to you, and so I'm interested in just either the story or acting.
I don't know if like you can tell me if it is in the book or not, but like, I do like the tie-in to the Game of Thrones series, and it does kind of like complete the circle, and that is the dagger.
Oh yeah.
Like, I don't know if like that's actual like it's supposed to be, like, obviously A Song of Ice and Fire is not done yet, so like, even if the dagger does show up, is it really that important in that connotation?
Here's the thing. What you just talked about right there is part of the things that I'm loving about the series right now. Because, one, that dagger and the whole story that we get with that dagger, with it being like you warm it up and you read the High Valyrian on it. As Viserys says, this is only shown and presented to the next heir to the Iron Throne. So none of the people in the books would know this existed, because none of them are the heirs to the throne.
Yeah.
And so you're asking this question. We don't know. We're not at the point where that stuff gets brought up or that information gets brought up to us, because of the fact that no one in the books knows about it. Like the Song of Ice and Fire, the actual like Jon Snow and all of them story. We haven't gotten that far yet, or to that point, and anyone who would know that information is dead. They're gone.
Mm-hmm.
And we're seeing this play out in this way, and that's one of the things that I absolutely love about this show, because you see this scene, and it's like, there's no way no one from the books would know this. This is not for anyone from the books, because we're hearing it from secondhand, third-hand accounts, and none of them are heirs, so none of them will have got it. So you ask me, I don't know, man. It's a fun thing.
But I do like that, especially yes. Since, like, essentially it's, like, the whole, like, Aegon's dream is, like, written on it, and he talks about how, like, the continent of Westeros has to like, unite itself and fight this threat, and it's the dagger that kills the Night King. That's just funny to me. I want to say they only did that after they're like, you know what would be a cool thing, a cool throwback and nod, is if we put the dagger in and we make the dagger this actual important thing.
Yeah. So that dagger is actually in the books. It's already in the books.
Okay.
It just hasn't been like presented as a very functional thing yet, because that's the dagger that who the heck gave it? Cersei? I forget who gives the dagger to him. To the one dude to kill Bran.
Yeah.
That's the dagger that was used.
I thought it was Littlefinger. I know it was Littlefinger. Yeah. Because like the whole that whole plot was literally to get the Lannisters and the Starks to fight.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't intended to get them to fight. It was actually to like to kill off Bran, so that way Ned wouldn't go to King's Landing and then he'd go back. It backfired because freaking Ned doesn't care about his children as much as he'd like to believe. And he still left. So, womp womp. But you brought up that dagger, and it's also funny because I've been seeing a lot of people being upset and angry about the dagger. Because it's like, oh, that prophecy, right? The prophecy that meant nothing at the end of Game of Thrones Season 8. Like the whole final kid and whatnot. And I'm like, I think there's more to the prophecy or understanding than what people take. And then it's also the take of when you're reading and like watching Game of Thrones, watching is one thing, reading it is a different thing. You get a lot more like mystical things added. And one of the things you have to kind of debate with is whether or not these prophecies are real, whether or not magic is real, and whether or not the gods are real. Because each of those different questions, if not, or if true, changes how all of it happens. Because if the gods aren't real, then Azor Ahai is not a thing. If the prophecies aren't real, then what's happening doesn't really matter, and people are just kind of self-fulfilling things by forcing everyone to be named Aegon. And yeah. Then if magic's not real, then how do you explain like the rites and all that stuff? Mm-hmm. There is many things that like people don't know and don't understand that we don't like. It's all a little more ambiguous in the books, because in the books we don't have the Night King. The Night King doesn't exist in the book. It's just the White Walkers or the others. And they're kind of more like a plague type deal thing where it's like they're undead hordes than anything else.
Yeah, we also have like Catelyn Stark, you know, being this zombie undead woman, Lady Stoneheart, you know, like.
And that's the other thing, right? If the gods exist, and if the god brought back Catelyn Stark for her, why? What is the intention? What's the thought process on it? But if the gods are not real, then this is some form of magic or like voodoo, essentially, being presented from Old Ashai that was brought over for that reasoning. And it could be the same type of magic that brings the White Walkers to life. And so there's an actual like reasoning to learn this, because it could be the key to stopping the White Walkers. But we don't know. We don't have that information. Like, and that's what's interesting, one, for the books to be finished whenever that happens. I'm still waiting on that, but hey, man, take your time. I'm under the mindset, personally, that it's like, let him take his time. He's been working with other people, so if anything happens to him, you know, like, hopefully not. There are people who are able to continue the series and finish it for him. And I believe, like, that would happen if something happens to Ger Martin. They would be able to finish it probably a lot quicker than him, but I don't know if it would be as well contextualized without him. But that's besides the point. That's Game of Thrones. That's Ice and Fire. Let's talk about House of the Dragon.
Yeah,
with like the whole dagger thing. Yeah,
yeah. Like I like that. Like that was a cool nod. I'm honestly trying to remember the series, because like I didn't binge it. I watched also, it a week at a time.
Yeah, same. So I did too.
We also got to see like so in Game of Thrones, the show, we got to see like at the end of like the last couple seasons, we got to see the tomb of that dragon with like the big old like bone skull.
Yeah, the Black Dread. Yeah.
Yeah, we never knew about that until like the last seasons of Game of Thrones.
We knew that about in season one. Because Arya, when she ran through the thing, she ran through the skull.
Oh, I don't remember.
Yeah. That was also, in the
I've only
the
watched that show like one time.
Yeah, that was in the lower keeps. And that's whenever she was running away and like running through everything, she finds the skull. Because Robert hates the skulls. He hated the skulls. Mm. He hates the Targaryens. He wanted all of them gone. But these are gigantic skulls. They can't just toss them out. So they all just kind of shove them down in the lower dungeons and said, forget about it.
That, and there was a shot that was filmed in I'm really bad at like knowing certain landmarks. So the stone table, where is that at?
That's on Dragonstone.
Yep.
Okay, so on Dragonstone, they actually show a scene from a callback from Game of Thrones, like a shot, and that is like inside the cave. There's a shot where it shows like them walking. It was Rhaenyra and I forget his name, white-haired guy that she marries
that's a lot of people.
Faking his death.
Are you talking about Lenore?
Yeah. Lenore and like her are walking down the beach like before they're about to get married. Mm-hmm. And there's a shot where they show like inside of a cave. That's the same shot they used with Jon and Daenerys when they went there in like the season. So like I saw that and I was like, oh, that's a great a little nod back of that shot. Because it was just a quick shot. Like, I remember that shot, and I was like, oh, wow, it's beautiful.
You know what's funny, too? Mm-hmm. I think that may be the... No, wait, hold up. I have to think about this. Nope, never mind. Never mind. I'm messing up the two different areas. Because in Stannis Baratheon, Davos, has a thing where Stannis is held up inside of a castle, and they're running out of food, and Davos smuggles in a bunch of like food for him. I think it's onions specifically, so they could eat and live. Onion, and I thought for a second, I thought for a second it was Dragonstone, but I'm like, wait, no, I think it's Stormlands. I think it's in the Stormland because Stannis couldn't let Robert lose his like seat. Because if they lost a seat, they would, like, delegitimize his whole fight in Conquest. And then, you know, Stannis is, I mean, Robert's a freaking piece of junk and kind of forgets about his brother after the war. And he's like, oh, yeah, you're still holding up in that castle. I'm sorry, bro. Yeah. So, yeah, you mentioned that nod. Like, there's a bunch of little nods. Like, I absolutely love seeing the dragon pits in full use. Yeah. That was really cool. You also see the Sept of Baelor, or whatever the Sept is called, before
I don't think it's the Sept. Like, are you talking about, like, when Aegon has his
coronation? Yeah.
No, that can't be. Because why is Rhaenys's dragon under it? That's the dragon pits. They had the coronation at the dragon pits.
No, she wasn't under it. She flew in. Like, she broke into the place.
No,
she breaks from underground. Yeah, she comes underground.
I didn't think she broke under. Yeah,
they actually have it on the dragon pit, because later on, they talk about where the coronation is to Rhaenyra, or if I butcher her name completely, they talk about how, because she's like, what did you? And she's like, well, I actually was there when it bursted up.
Because that's why she smiles. That's why she smiles too. Like, whenever she gets separated from the one.
Yeah, you're right. It is in the dragon pit.
Because she smiles because she wanted to go there originally, but, like, no, it's too dangerous. We can't go there.
Yeah, because, like, that dragon pit becomes very significant, probably in season 2 or 3 of the show. I know that there's, like, a huge thing with the dragon pit.
Well, there's a lot. Here's the thing.
Mm-hmm.
There is a lot that is told in the story of the Dance of the Dragons that we don't get a lot of context for. We just kind of get told, like, this happens because this. Again, there's a lot more context to that I'm more interested in. And that's what I'm going to be excited for. The Dragon Pit's one thing. There's a couple other that I don't want to get into too much detail.
Yeah.
Why did they think it was a smart idea to crown him in the Dragon Pit?
I mean, whenever you're a family obsessed with dragons, like, that's probably one of the places that it's big enough that they could do it. I don't know, because, like I said, like, the Sept of Baelor is not made yet, because I think he comes later down the road.
Well, no, they have the Sept already made, because originally there was a other Sept that was destroyed by Maegar the Cruel whenever these militant rose up, and he killed them and burned it down. And then the Reconciliator, I forget his name, like Jaehaerys the Reconciliator or whatever it is, rebuilds it to build back the ties with the Faith militant. But it's still outlawed. Like, they can't have a military until later on, and then everything kind of goes to trash, because why would you do that?
I think why they actually did it in the Dragon Pit, though, is probably just a little kind of message that they're sending her in a way, because it kind of just, like, spits in the face of, like, the Targaryens.
It doesn't make, like, sense, though. That's the issue. All the kings are always crowned at the Sept.
Yeah.
Because it's supposed to be, like, a brought on. Or they are crowned, like, by the Iron Throne. You don't really see them done in the Dragon Pit. I could be wrong here. I don't remember it being presented as the Dragon Pit. I've always heard it should be, is the king who anoints. Because, like, when Aegon the Conqueror initially became king of the Seven Kingdoms, he was crowned in the Sept, because it was the religion essentially acknowledging him as king, which put the whole of Westeros behind him. Because up to that point, they were all like, he's not one of us. We don't really care. He follows old traditions and old gods. And then he gets annoyed in that, and they're like, all right, he's not that bad. Yeah, they have queer customs of, like, marrying their children or marrying their, like, sisters or whatnot. But it's not intended, you know?
So you actually just kind of, like, prove the point a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So they're doing this in the Dragon Pit because who was all there? The people. This isn't like, oh, we're going to do it as tradition. This is literally a Hightower 4D chess move going, we're going to coronate him in public. Everyone's going to see him. Everyone's going to know he's king. Really solidify it. Like, yeah. I think that's because then it comes into question, like, when Rhaenys comes up, and then she's just like, well, I'm the rightful heir. And everyone's like, no, we saw that dude get crowned, not you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think it's more of like just a checkmate. Like it's kind of like a spit in the face of, doing it in a Dragon's Keep, because she is like, you know, that's the whole Targaryen way, I think, maybe. I don't know. That's how I...
No, I mean, what you guys are saying is possible. I don't... I know that What's-Her-Face said... Alicent said that she wanted it to show that the strength of the Targaryens is strong. But I thought the reason why she said that was not because of we're crowning him in the Dragon Pit, but rather he's going to be crowned with the obsidian crown of Aegon the Conqueror, which you see like Rhaenyra later with the golden crown. That's the one that was presented later, not the initial one. And also with Dark Sister, the ancestral blade. And so it's like, I thought those were the things she was talking about as showing off the strength of the Targaryen family line. Because as Daemon pointed out earlier in the episode, it's like, so what? They have three dragons. We have four. And we have all the dragons on Dragonstone.
Four. Yes, which will probably play an effect.
Yes, it will definitely
play
an effect.
In season two.
I think that's where we're going to start seeing a lot of the dragons play more.
I forget what they call them, but like the writers become those people, I forget what.
Yeah, I know what it's called, but I'm gonna wait for it.
I actually read I said I deep dive when I get into things. So it was one of those things like as I was watching, I was like, oh, okay, who's this? And then like I Google it and then I just go down like the family tree of it and I'm looking at it like, okay. And I read some events and I was like, oh, okay. Like yeah, I know the name of the Dragon Rider people because of that.
Yeah.
And see, here's the thing. This is the beautiful and interesting thing about this season, this series, right? If you Google search Dance of Dragons, the whole thing's spoiled to you. It's almost impossible to not be spoiled on this series. At least the main points. Because you could just look up Daemon's fate. Daemon's fate, Aegon's fate, Rhaenyra's fate. You could do all that and find the answers instantly. But what was the one thing we complained about Game of Thrones doing, the original TV show? They didn't travel to the endpoint correctly. They didn't have the way marked out for them. And so by the end of it, everything felt wrong because it's like, why is Bran on the throne whenever he did nothing for the kingdom prior to it? Why is Jon going back to the north whenever he hated the north? Why is Daenerys going crazy? Like, stuff like that. In the books, it presented it in a pathway correctly. The show did not do that. In this situation, we know the start, the finish, and the midpoint. But the in-between is where it's going to be an interesting story to tell.
Because that brings up the point of, like, what I read. Mm-hmm. Of the, because like, I mean, you guys do it all the time, because like we've obviously talking about the season, obviously spoilers. The final episode, we all know what happens. The people who read Dance of Dragons and like have watched it, like they know that it happens.
Yeah.
Vhagar, kind of, as one someone I talked to basically has Vietnam flashbacks of like when they were conquering old Valyria and then kind of goes off on her own and eats a little dragon.
He destroys the little boy.
And then ends the War of Ravens and begins the War of Fire and Blood.
Begins the Dance of Dragons, yeah.
Yeah.
But like anytime like I've looked into that, it was always just like, oh, Aemon did that on purpose. Did that on purpose. Like that's how he gets his title and all that stuff.
Yeah, because I was just saying this to Austin a little bit before you jumped on, that is one of the things that I, when that happened in the show, I was overjoyed, because I'm like, that's what I want. I want the differentiations in storytelling from the books, because no one was there. No one could verify the information. And
because,
oh, beautiful. I loved it.
Yeah, because it was one of those things. Because Aemon wanted to hurt. Was it just Jacaerys?
It was Lucerys.
Okay, yeah. He wanted to hurt Lucerys, obviously, because He took his eye. He kind of has like a vendetta against him. I don't know if he ever actually wanted to kill him.
No. How that scene basically presented itself to me was two ways. One, the books had two different perceptions on what happened. The Maester's basically saying, like, there's not enough information to say what happened. All we know is that from the watchers on the towers, they saw fire blast in the distance, a loud shrieks, and then a couple of days later, Araxes's body and young Lucarius's body washed up on the tide.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's going to happen in the series.
Well, no, we don't know if that's going to be seen. We know that's how Rhaenyra finds out.
Yeah.
But how Mushroom, the jester said, who also has a tendency of being more graphic and horrific with his storytelling, says that the reason why he ran off to kill him was because he was berated by the oldest child of the Baratheons for being soft and incomplete as a man because he lost his eye. She's like, I'm glad you picked my sister because I only want to be married to a real man who has all of his parts. And then he ran off and did it. As shown in the show, that's not true. But what is true is that when Aegon goes, I think he intended to scare him and possibly do some damage to his dragon as like a, you're out of your league, go back and cry home. But then whenever Arax, the small dragon, I think that's his name. I always say his name wrong.
It's like Raxus or something. He's dead. Raxus. It doesn't matter.
He's dead. He's gone. When he fire blasts Vhagar, or whatever the big dragon's name is, like you said, a little bit of a PTSD flashback goes in, or it just becomes super angry. It straight up noms on that boy and kills him. And Aemon's freaking out. Like, you see him, like, yelling through the whole thing. They're both, like, saying, like, no, stop. Listen to me. Listen. It just shows that the dragons are not bound to the creator, to the riders. They essentially allow them to ride on them. And I think that there's show between this. Because a lot of people were complaining about this scene. Because it's like, how come Daenerys was able to control her dragons? But they can't. And I'm like, well, there's difference between these guys, right? With Vhagar, Vhagar is very old. Very, very old. And he probably doesn't see the rider on him as his commander, more as like his like great grandchild.
You are getting the analogy of what this one person I was talking to about it. Like he's a cool dude. He's really knowledgeable, but he's basically like, she basically has like flash. It's like she's like how he put it was like she basically ends up getting flashbacks of like the old war. Is like, we're fighting the Dornish. Okay.
Like, you murdered me right last time.
Someone should make that a meme. Like, have you guys ever seen the meme about like Oscar and then like it just like goes over and it's just like in the fade like these choppers from Vietnam?
Mm-hmm.
They should just do that for him.
Well, I think someone did that, but it was like the picture of Vhagar like staring at something, and then it's like the show's the picture of him getting fire blasted, and then it's Vhagar's face on top of the one dude. It's like, and I took that personally. So it's like, people are doing memes for that to show off. And like with Daenerys and having her dragons, they essentially like view her as the mother because they were born with her. It's one thing to have a dragon that like has been alive for a long time. It's another thing to be with the dragon from the get-go. Those dragons are more like defensible.
You know, the dragon killed Daenerys in the end, right? She stepped on it. The dragon stepped on him, and he's like, oh, no, I killed her, and, like, took her off, you know? You know?
Okay. Well...
That was a meme from, like, a long time ago when that series ended. People were so upset of how things ended that they came up with that idea that the dragon accidentally stepped on her, and that's why the dragon carried her body away. It was just ridiculous.
Yeah. There's a lot of like the story elements of it. But the beautiful part about that scene, and this is why I kind of bring this up, is after Vhagar killed Lucarys, Aemon had two choices. And this is why I like most. He could either, one, go back to King's Landing, tell his mom and tell everyone that it's like, look, my dragon wasn't listening to me, it refused to listen, and it killed him. And be seen as, one, a kinslayer, because it doesn't matter what you do, You're going to be a kinslayer, but you're also a weakling because you couldn't control your dragon and you can't be trusted to do things because of this.
Mm-hmm.
Or he could roll with it. Goes back to King's Landing and say, I went there, I found Lucaris, I killed Lucaris because he was trying to be an insurrectionist, and I put it down as a knight is supposed to be done. And then he's viewed as a Kinslayer still, but he's also viewed as strong, hard, and like loyal. And I think that's what we're gonna get. The reason why in the books he's seen as this like hard, horrible person isn't because of the things he's done up to this point, it's because of the things that he does after this point that he's viewed as a hard and horrible person. And I think this is the start where he has to kind of create a persona and like lie about the persona.
That, or he's going to tell someone that he did that accidentally, and then they're going to, I think it might be the hand. I think he's going to tell the hand about that, and then the hand's like, no, we're going to keep this hush. We're going to keep this as, like, you did what you had to do, and you had to kill him because of this. So that makes him that way.
Yeah. Regardless, the band-aid, the wound has been cut. Can't do anything about it. You might as well spin it in a way that benefits us and you. Because regardless of how you look at it, he did one good thing. He got rid of one of the dragons. Even though that dragon was a baby, that dragon versus armed cavalrymen would absolutely destroy them. That baby against that big dragon, useless.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the things. I'm sad that they didn't do a scene with young Lucaris' body being brought up on the shore and being presented to him.
I honestly don't, like, I know, like, in the book, like, that little short story about, like, he goes and he takes the eye of Lucaris to bring it back to the Baratheon girl and be like, here's the eye. But it's also one of those things of like, just how it was depicted. I don't think there's a body. Dragon, for sure. There was only two pieces of that dragon that fell from the sky. Well, the head and the tail.
I think maybe the hand's going to pay someone to remove their eye. Because we've already seen, like, a couple people do that already with, like, dismembered body parts where they've done it, like, where they know people that will do it for them. Like, I think the White Worm thing is going to be huge next season. I think that he might go to the hand and say this, and the hand's like, no, we need to show that, you know, that you did this, you know. So he probably, like, plucks out someone else's eye.
Yeah, well, I don't really see that being an issue, because
I don't think the hand will.
Yeah,
I think it'll be feet.
Yeah, it'll be. Yeah, no, he's definitely the man to do it. Was Mr.
Yeah, because he actually, like, wasn't he the one that ordered them to, like, get their tongues cut out? Like,
yeah, well,
yeah,
I know who you're talking about. The ones where it's like, oh, we can't trust them to do anything, so we have to. Yeah, that was him. The assassins or whatever.
Yeah.
No, and see, that's the thing. Like, that's what's going to be interesting to happen, because in the books, we know of one situation that occurs because of what happens with the Glarus. We won't go into the hard details of it, but there's a situation that comes up that's kind of, like, super slimy that happens. And I'm wondering how the retaliation is going to happen in the show, because the books, we only get told of, like, that happens, then this happens, and then it's just chaos after that. I wonder if there's going to be more, like, behind the scenes negatives that go on. Because a lot of the times when it talks about the books, it's only talking about the key players. You don't hear a lot about, like, Kristen Cool or the Erics or the Ericsons. Like, you hear some of them. You hear, like, key things, but you don't hear about what they're doing in between each thing.
Yeah, because, like, the only thing I remember from Kristen Cole is him, like, he actually, like, when they have the council after the king's dead, he actually, like, in the show, he, like, smashes his head into the table. I think if I'm correct, what's in the book, he actually slashes the dude's throat.
And see, here's the thing, right? This is another situation of the book having misinformation and the show having true information. I'm not saying that what's happening in the show is 100% true, but when you're looking at it from the book's narration, is that no one who was in that room is alive during that time, except I believe Mushroom was in that room, or is said to be in that room. And Mushroom is known to do things more graphically and horrifically. And this is the honest truth, and you knowing this will help you understand Game of House of Dragons more. And it's not much of a spoiler, it's more of, like, how the world works. is by the end of House of the Dragon, the winners are going to do everything in their power to do two things. One, to make them look good. And two, to unite the realm so that way this doesn't happen again.
Well,
that's,
you know,
that's
like...
the two big things. And so if you have this big problem in this boardroom and chaos erupts and no one's in the room to say what really happened, there's two options. You can either, one, tell your thought, or two, pin it on someone that people don't like to begin with. And that's why I felt like they did in the show. Because even, because this is not a spoiler about Kristen Cole's side of this, because we hear about it in Game of Thrones with Jaime Lannister. Because Jaime Lannister is put to a one-to-one with Kristen Cole. Because Kristen Cole is later known as the Kingmaker for what he apparently does in the Small Council. He kills the dude. And so in the show, we understand, like, oh, he kills this dude intentionally. But then in the House of Dragons prequel series, we see he didn't intend to kill the guy.
Or just slammed his head. And
he slammed him down and he hit his head. Like, whether, like, I don't think he intended to kill him, but he definitely intended to show force. He didn't think the old man was as fragile as he was. But hey, man, he was 67 years old. Like, that skull's fragile.
Well, see, that's the other thing that, like, what's interesting when you talk about this is, like, you know, what perception, like, in the books that we see, what isn't true fact, but it's also, it shows in the show that this is true. And, like, there's a scene coming up, probably, it's going to be season 8. It has to be season 2. It's, like, probably the beginning of season 2. That I think is not correct what we're being told in the story. And we'll talk about it off screen because I don't want to ruin it for people. But there is something that I think is going to change. And, you know, you brought up a good point, is the victors win the write the history, and they favor themselves, you know, which happens in real life. You know, the victors write history and the losers don't. So I see where, like, some of these people are trying to justify themselves. Like, when I've been listening to the book, I'm like, oh yeah, they're saying, like, really nice things about this. Like, this doesn't make sense. So we'll see that going forward. But yeah, I think I'm really interested in this show now. I remember when this first came out, I watched, like, the first episode, like, first 20 minutes. And you guys said you guys watched it every week, right?
Yeah, I watched it weekly.
Okay. Yeah, because, like, I didn't. I binged it probably this week, actually. I binged the rest of it. I got to episode 9, because, like, I watched I know that there was a meme that was going around in my group about the feet thing, and I had to watch that part because I wanted to know what that was all about. But I ended up watching the rest of it this week, so yeah.
What's funny to me, Austin, is when you were watching it in Discord and I was joining you to watch it with you. And the whole time, during one point, you're like, I'm so confused. I don't know what's happening. What are they doing? And my brain is just like, you haven't been paying attention, have you? Because they explained it full right. It's like, we need to find Aegon. Where's Aegon at? We don't know where Aegon's at. And so they're, like, running around looking for him. And he's just like, I don't know what's going on. Why are they out there?
Well, no, see, like, one of the things that really confused me, and it took me a while to think about it, and I think after watching a video about it, I kind of got it. I didn't understand why both of them were looking for Aegon, and what was the purpose of the Hand getting him, or what was the purpose of the Queen getting him. And I had to look up, like, why. I was like, oh, okay, this makes sense. Because for some odd reason, I couldn't pick it up on the show. I have no clue.
Yeah. I mean, it all came down to one thing. Like, the Hand wanted to send people to Dragonstone to kill Rhaenyra and all of her kids. Look for little Nicky. But Alicent wanted to, like, show respect and be like, hey, you abdicate the throne, you and your kids live in isolation on Dragonstone for the rest of your life, and we put this whole thing behind us because this is what your father wanted. We all know that that would never work to begin with, and that's where everything goes. The one thing I want to point out, and a lot of people have been doing this a lot, and they're like, this whole show could have been avoided if like Rhaenyra would have just like passed off the throne. This whole thing could have been avoided if Viserys just would have put Aegon in his place. Like, they named so many different reasons why, like, oh, this could have been avoided if Maelys just fire blasted Aegon and all the Hightowers at once. 100% true. All those would have completely ended this issue. I will also say the fact that this is an issue is completely on Viserys' fault, because he knew, because he acquired the throne, because the kings of the kingdom wouldn't allow his sister to be on the throne.
Cousin,
yeah. Why does he think they would think differently for his kids? It makes no freaking sense. I don't care how much you love Rhaenyra, you are putting her in a situation where she would die. Because as you've seen, that when you became king, your cousin, you didn't kill off your cousin. But the whole thought process on Rhaenyra and what was being fed to her was that if she wasn't king, then Alicent would kill off all of her kids. That's not how the world works. It only became that way after Rhaenyra refused to give up the throne.
Yeah.
And Alicent was being fed all those lies, and she like started fearing for her kids. It was stupid. It was dumb. And then also the other thing that would have solved all this issue is if they would have just taken the deal that Rhaenyra gave. Like, I'll sell my kid to you. Because even if Alicent doesn't want to believe that kid is her rightful son with her Valon, that kid is still 50% Valyrian. That blood's still valid. And when you look at it retroactively with Game of Thrones, the whole reason why Robert was able to become king was because he had Valyrian blood on him, in him, from, like, ancestors past. And it's so funny and stupid that they made this a problem. Because it's a stupid problem. It was a stupid problem to begin with. Both sides are at fault. And I'm ready to see how this all plays out as, like, different stories and different things. I'm ready to see different people's reaction to events, the deaths, to how things reveal. That's what I'm in for this for. It's the equivalent of you having... Austin. It's the equivalent of what we do every time we do a show that I want you to watch or you want me to watch. You get to enjoy the other person's reaction to watching the show. And to find out and to get invested or not get invested and see how things go out. And that's how I feel about the whole series right now with everyone I talk to who knows nothing. Like with Jordan, with you a little bit. I'm like, I'm just excited to see how you all react. And then the small little bits that I get to see that are different. That's where the fun comes in for myself.
And so like, I just don't, like, normally I don't really care for spoilers because, like, okay, that's how it ends. It could be disappointing, it could be whatever. I normally end up caring more about how it got to that situation. So, like, yeah. Like the fact that, like, you could go online and look at all this stuff and spoil the entire series. Be like, oh, this happens and all this stuff. I was like, okay, that's cool and all, but, like, as we stated before, the book does not come from a hard factual place. It
exactly.
is hearsay. And so, like, you can know what happens, but there are going to be details that can change your perspective of why that happened.
Mm-hmm. Or and it could just be completely fabricated. Like, that's the other thing.
That's the other thing. And, like, I like that. So, like, this series, honestly, as, like, as someone who likes... I'm will jump and read spoilers.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be like, okay, how does this escalate to this point? What happens? And also, just like I enjoy seeing how it gets executed too, because like sometimes it'll be like, oh, that was really gnarly. That's like how I imagined it, or like that's 10 times worse than what I imagined. And then sometimes it's just like, oh. That could have been better, but you know what?
That is exactly what happened with me at the end with Aemon and Lucaris. That was my most, like, the thing that I wanted to see the most. And I think I told Austin, or I told someone, that I'm like, I hope they end season one with this. And they did.
I think it might have been me, because I think I was taking you to the airport.
That could very well. I think it was maybe during New Orleans, whenever I was going to New Orleans and you were taking me. Maybe. Because I know the second time we've already watched that. That was already that episode already aired. But it was definitely that first show. And yeah, that I was super thrilled because I'm like, that is a great season one endpoint. And then I think you told me, Jordan, I'm not 100% sure if this has been validated or whatnot, but I believe you 100% that there is only going to be 4 seasons of the show.
I was told that. I was told there's only gonna be 4 seasons.
Okay.
Which, I mean, it that's honestly kind of nice because it's like, it has to end. And, they could potentially, like, milk it for longer. But it's one of those things that, like, it definitely has an ending.
Yeah.
And, like, so, like, it's going to end eventually at some point.
And that's why I'm so excited for it. Because, like, it's one thing to have a show go on forever. We know how it ends. We know how it goes. And so if they choose to, like, slow down at some point, we're going to feel it and we're going to know it. And that may make people upset. Or it may make people very happy. Who knows? We'll figure it out when it happens. All right, guys. All right. So I have a question for you guys. Is there anything left you guys want to talk about or bring up about House of the Dragon Season 1? Any final thoughts? Any final things? Feel free to just jump in.
There was, like, I will say there was a lot of time skipping, which, I mean, obviously it's going to happen.
Yeah.
Because, like, there's it's all set up.
Yeah.
But now I think we're starting to get to the point where it's, like, solid. This is how things are going to be. We're going to be in this state for a while.
Yep, I agree.
And I think the pacing for it is perfect because they could have milked that a lot. With dialogue and just, you know, just filler. And I was actually really happy when they do jump. Now, the jumping did take me off. Like, the one of the first jumps kind of took me off by surprise. And that was, like, her being a child to, like, being a woman giving birth. I didn't know who that was to begin with because actors change, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Because one's older. And I was like, what the heck? Who is this? And then, like, it clicked in my head. I was like, oh, this is them older now. Okay, this makes
sense. You know what's funny? I didn't have that issue, but it was not because of the reason that I caught on. It was just the fact that I was watching with subtitles and it says Rhaenyra crying. And I'm like, oh, that's Rhaenyra.
I didn't have that. So I was like, what the heck is going on? Who is this person? Wait, what? Pregnant? She's got kids? They have kids. And then, like, they do, like, a little small time jump when she marries Damien. Mm-hmm. And they bring, like, the other two babies to, like, Viserys when he's on his deathbed. And he's like, this is them and him. And I was like, oh okay.
I would hate to be part of that family. Like, this, like, is one thing I'm happy about, that in today's society, we no longer name our kids after our ancestors all that much. Because, gosh dang, all the Aemons and Aegons and Aemons, no. Like,
so,
sucks.
I will say, that is something that I was just kind of like, in my head, I'm just like, you're okay with this, but not this. And it was like that whole situation, like in, like, the first couple episodes with young Rhaenyra. And it was like, it was the brothel scene.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I felt like Viserys wasn't angry that he was doing, like, Damien almost did this in public. It was more like he was doing this with his daughter type thing.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, it was just like, okay, so he obviously doesn't care that much for, like, I guess the direct incest.
Mm-hmm.
Like, uncle's daughter or niece. But then you have his kids.
I think
who's Aegon married to? His own sister.
I don't think he had issue with that. I think he had an issue because she wasn't, like, promised to a king yet, to someone.
Mm-hmm.
And if she would become, like, deflowered or whatever you want to call it,
that's as Alicent
named it, like, a lot of the Lords of the Seven Kingdom would turn their nose to her. But the problem is like, and this is where I have the thing. She never once told Viserys that she wanted Daemon. But Daemon essentially was like, I don't really want her because she's just a child. I don't want a child. And then when she got older, he's like, well, you know, you're older now. Like,
yeah.
that
I'm taking
this
it home,
different.
The youngster.
I'm going to murder off my cool wife that I see for like 10 minutes and then be like, yep, she's my bronze dead woman now. Like, man.
That's also another thing, too. Like, they're making this big big deal about her first two kids, the strong boys.
Yeah, the strong boys, yeah.
They're specifically Luceris and like mm-hmm. giving him Driftmark.
Yeah.
Giving him Driftmark. And it's just like, I mean, he is a Valerian. Mm-hmm. So that's valid. And it's just like, no, he's a bastard. And it's just like, okay. Even if that is true, he could be legitimized. But it's also one of those things, it's like, it doesn't matter. Because, like, there was the whole thing of just like, oh, but blood has to, like, it's
you,
about
you know
blood.
Who...
And then he says, no, it's about the name. Exactly. Like, the name was more important. However, who was he promised to?
He was promised to the daughter.
Exactly.
What you're saying is 100% true. And the like... connotation about the name is the only thing that matters to them. And the bloodline means nothing. The only one who cared about the bloodline was Allison. And Allison was the only one who cares about the bloodline. Why? Because she's a Hightower, because she's the original Westerosian. The Targaryens don't care all that much about the blood because they incestualize so much that the blood is already muddled. Like, you look at one of them, you're like, you're a blood Valyrian. Even if he was half Valyrian, half strong, his kids would be 80% Valyrian if he married What's-Her-Face.
Exactly.
Because it would be 25% from him, 25, I guess it would be 75%, whatever. You get what I'm saying. They would wean out the strong blood into him instantly. And that's not even talking about all the years that the Valyrians, whatever their name, the Driftmark people, had different bloods in their blood to begin with, or all the Targaryens, because the Targaryens didn't always marry Targaryens. They married mm-hmm. other people outside of it.
I mean, what is it? Rhaenys is part Aaron.
Yeah, she's Aaron. Even like, I think even Viserys and Daemon are part something. I forget what they are. Or no, they were 100% because that was Alice, Queen Alyssa, or whatever her name, and them, Jaehaerys the Wise, I think.
I'm just saying, Damien is one of the best wingmen.
I disagree. I think Aemon is the best wingman.
He was a wingman to Sir Christopher. He got the engine started and then just pushed her out, and then Sir Christopher was there. So it worked out.
I just think it's funny with him. Go on.
He was about to hire Curry himself there for a minute.
Mm-hmm. But he should have.
Yeah. Ugh.
I will say I've never seen someone get rejected by a girl and then not able to live with himself for like 5 years and like. The reason why he was going to Hirikiri himself is because he's like, I defiled my white cloak. And then it's like the queen came in and says, like, pledge your loyalty to me and you don't have to kill yourself. It's like, no, that's not how that works. In fact, that's the opposite of what a knight's guard would do.
Yep.
It's like he went from like, I'm super
I'm willing to get rid of my cloak to be with you to be, oh, I've defiled this.
I'm going to kill myself.
He's just simping around.
He totally is. Simping. He's just a... That is the situation of Jaime Lannister to me. It's like Jaime became part of the Kingsguard not because he wanted to be, but because Cersei was living in the castle at the time. And so he became a Kingsguard because he wanted to be with Cersei. But then second he became the Kingsguard, basically what happened was Tywin Lannister was the Hand of the King to the Mad King Aerys. But then whenever Aerys started doing his thing, he pushed Tywin out because he didn't trust him. Tywin became mad and angry, and so he took all of his kids back. However, he found out that Jaime and like Cersei was spending a little too close time together. And so he sends Cersei off to become like a handmaiden at the king thing. That's when Jaime became like a good knight. And he was knighted to become a Kingsguard by the Mad King to spite Tywin.
Yeah. And that's then when Tywin gave up his...
That's when Tywin took Cersei out. And then that separated Jaime and her more.
Yeah. Because he returns to Castle Rock, if I'm correct.
Yeah, yeah. He's basically like, screw this. And then that's when everything started falling
down. Yeah, because like, what was it, like a year, like a couple of months before that, his wife dies of childbirth.
Yeah.
To, what's his name? Tyrion. Yeah, there you go.
And then that's like, also like, before that happened, the Mad King was known to like go to other people's houses and basically force himself onto the lords or the ladies because of the right of the first knight or whatever. Like he would do that, and so there was Prima Nocta, whatever it's called. Mm-hmm. And so there was a rumor that Tyrion was half Valyrian or half of him, because as seen in this show, the Targaryens have a tendency of boring children with deformities because of all their incest. And so they believe that Tyrion was not actually of Lannister descent outside of the mom, because it was actually the Mad King who bore him.
That, and I just want to say one last thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, this show gave me a lot of thinking to do. And I'm glad that modern medicine is the way it is, of childbirth. Childbirth in the show was pretty legit. Like, I'm a history buff myself, and I do like the time periods and stuff like that. So childbirth is one of the most dangerous things that a woman could encounter when she was in this world and she was meant to have children, especially an heir or whatever. And watching them do a C-section on that queen, mm-hmm. and then her dying and the son dying, was like, that happens. Like, that is a legit thing. And I think the one that really got me was the stillbirth, when she like literally gives birth to a baby months before. I think that's called a stillbirth. I don't remember. But she gives birth to a child, like, was it not in her trimester? And watching that child hit the floor, and then her holding that child, and watching Damien come in and see her all like wrapping that child up that's bleeding out, that just devastated me. It like hurt me, because you know, like, that's something that like I never want to ever go through, you know. And you know, I kind of went through it in a way, but like, you know, I understand completely that I'm so happy that modern medicine has gotten to a point where like we can prevent like a lot of these infections and ways that we do things.
Yeah.
So
and that's the thing, like the show's great. The show has a lot of historical truths and then a lot of fantasy truths and fantasies. Mm-hmm. And that's why I enjoy a lot about Game of Thrones, is that Ger Martin does, like, he really likes to make the world in truth of what like the old time was. And I acknowledge that, and I get that. There are some things that he does in the books or happens in the shows and everything that I don't like seeing. Like, I'm like, I get that happened. I just would prefer not to see it. But this show didn't have a lot of that stuff. I didn't feel that way. Molly, kicking my...
People were really upset with the birthing. Like, a lot of people said it was too graphic. And then there was a lot of people said it wasn't graphic enough. And I'm just like, this did exactly what it was supposed to do, and that is to show you that there is a risk of childbirth in for the mother and for the baby.
You know what's also funny? It was a little political too, because you have Viserys, who is given the information that, hey, the baby is not going to live, or no, the wife will not live. And the baby may not live because of it.
Yeah.
And for that reason, we're giving you the choice. You get to decide. And he ultimately decides, kill the wife, try to get me the baby. And he regrets it because the baby doesn't live anyways. Meanwhile, you have the same parallel happen later with Damon and his wife, the Driftwood woman. And whenever that decision is brought to him, he takes it to her. He's like, you get to decide, it's your body, your life. And I think she ultimately decides to like die by dragon fire.
Yeah.
She wants to go out by her dragon, which is, it's her choice. And so it's like the whole idea of like, you know, choice or pro-choice or whatnot. And we don't need to get into all that stuff, but that was a situation that people were pointing out, like, you know, Damon at least let his wife decide for her how she would live. The other one didn't get to choose, and she freaked out whenever she started realizing what was happening to her. Mm-hmm. And that was more horrific of a scene because she didn't choose this, and she was going to get killed for it. So yeah. It's crazy, man. It's all that crazy stuff. All right, guys. I think that basically does it, because we went over a good like 20-25 minutes of our normal episode times just talking about. I really enjoyed this. Can't wait for next season, which will be, they'll start filming next year, and I think it will be 2024 whenever the season comes out. I could be wrong.
Yeah, because like HBO has a lot of like you know, they're going through a lot right now with layoffs, they're killing, like that. They're killing off things.
Cartoon
The Last
Network.
Of Us is coming out, you know, like
never played it. Which, man, I don't think I will play it because of the fact that the show's coming out. And so we're going to go into
kind
it
of like a switcheroo, because I've played it and you haven't. So
And so you're going to get my perspective from someone who's never played it. You'll get Austin's perspective from someone who has. And what were you going to say, Jordan?
I mean, you are going to play it if you watch it, because that's literally all you did in Last of Us anyway.
Yeah, pretty much.
That's what you're going to do.
You just get to watch it with real people and not see, and not
I get to watch it
models.
With Dornish guy.
I'm very interested in like where they're going to take it, because there is some things in that game where I'm like, we'll see. So, and I'm pretty excited of the cast that they got, two Game of Thrones people. So.
Yeah. Well, Austin, Jordan, thank you so much for, before we go into the final thing, we are next week, as people who have watched us live can see, we are watching She-Hulk next week. We said that last week on the podcast, but, you know, just confirm it that we will be watching it for next week. Taking a break from fantasy things, and then we're going to jump into the Ring of Power afterwards. So that's what we'll be watching next week, is She-Hulk. Jordan, thank you so much for joining us on Bros and Shows. It was lovely having you here. Hopefully you come back again.
Yeah. I can. I've watched Ring of Power.
You're always free to come back. I said,
come back for Ring of Power. We have to do Ring of Power.
You can come back for Ring of Power. I know I was talking about to have Dylan on as well, so I'm down to have four people down. The more the merrier, as long as it doesn't become like a Halo party chat back in the day where everyone's yelling at each other trying to get words in. I think it will be great. I think it would be fun. So I would love it for you to join us for Ring of Power. Austin, as always, thank you so much for joining me too for House of the Dragon. And thank you all so much for stopping by. And thank you all so much for tuning in.